Blog Talk Radio.
Good God, what was that?
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man. Indians call him Sasquatch. They believe he is as gentle as he is powerful and mysterious.
And welcome to Georgia Bigfoot Radio. I'm your host, Dan Miller.
All right, and welcome to Georgia Bigfoot Radio. I am your host, Dan Miller. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a great show tonight. I've got a guest that I've been wanting to get on for a while, and it's probably going to be one of the better shows, in my opinion, because we've got a lot of great, I should say my guest will have a lot of great stuff to talk about that is happening on his own property, and we're going to get to that real shortly. What we're going to do right now is just go over a couple of things real quick. First and foremost, just like in the previous shows, I always start off by talking about the Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page. Please visit the Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page. There you will find previous episodes that you can listen to. Also, give the page a like. And the third item about the Facebook page for Georgia Bigfoot Radio, there is a link on there for a GoFundMe page. There is a small cost to having this podcast every month, and any donations are not required but certainly appreciated, and 100% of the proceeds will go towards the show, and any donations, of course, are greatly appreciated, but like I said, they're not required. All right, and moving on, as always, I do get messages, and so I'm going to go over just a few messages before we get to our guest. Let's see. Our first question comes from Jimmy. All right, Jimmy. He says he listened to last week's show, and he says that I also am a big fan of Sasquatch Chronicles, and which is a question that I answered in last week's show. What are my favorite podcasts regarding the Bigfoot mystery? And I said Sasquatch Chronicles is definitely one of them. As a matter of fact, I'm a paying member. I love what Wes Germer and his brother have done. I think Wes has a great show. He's got a great template of how he formats and presents the show. I've had the pleasure of actually exchanging some messages with Wes every now and then, and I think he's got a great show. Also, but I do want to include, there is a podcast out there called Arcane Radio. Arcane Radio is out of Pennsylvania. It's three guys up there, Lon Strickler, Sean Forker, and Butch Wachowski. I love Arcane Radio also. That is a great show. Lon Strickler is head of a website called phantomsandmonsters.com. So if you ever get a chance, please check that out, as well as their podcast. So those two, Sasquatch Chronicles and Arcane Radio, are my two favorite other podcasts besides my own. Okay, so I do want to make one comment regarding last week's show. If you remember, it was prior to Thanksgiving, and I didn't have any guests on like I do this week. And what I decided to do was I spent the whole hour talking about the Dyatlov incident, which, of course, as you know, at one time or another, you're probably going to run across this mystery when you're researching Sasquatch. And I listened to myself, not because I enjoyed doing that, but because I try to listen to myself in order to try and make myself a better host. And I wasn't very happy the way I presented the the sequence of events and also the way the evidence has been presented by Mr. Lebecki, who had done that documentary that I caught on the Destination America channel, which was about the Russian Bigfoot and that specific 1959 Dyatlov incident in the Ural Mountains of Russia. So just a quick note, sometime in the near future, I'm going to return to that topic, and I'm going to present it to all of you in a much more structured format. I'll probably do my homework a little bit more closely on that specific topic, and therefore I will actually write down and outline everything in a nice sequence and a nice specific timeline order, along with the proof that was, or I should say, along with evidence that has been collected in the years since, along with other information that's come to light over the decades, and present, like I said, present all of that to you out there in a much more structured format. So I'll get back to that sometime in the near future. Our next message, by the way, if you want to send a message to Georgia Bigfoot Radio, please do. Simply go to the Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page. There's a button on there that says send message. So send me a message if you've had a sighting, if there's something you'd like to talk about and you wish to be on the show, then please include your name and, of course, a number. Send me a message on that off of that Facebook page for Georgia Bigfoot Radio, and I'll get back to you, and we'll get you on. Anyway, the next message comes from Megan. And by the way, I have been getting more messages from ladies than I have guys, which is fantastic. I love that. Now, guys, are you going to let the ladies beat you at sending me messages? Go on that Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page and send me a message. All right. Anyway, Megan wants to know if we will be covering more missing 411. Again, I have addressed this in just about every introduction part of the show, where because I have read two out of the six books, specifically two out of the four books relating to missing persons in national parks. And I am going to cover that. I'll probably dedicate a whole show to it. I'm even going to go out on a limb and try and get Mr. David Paulides on the show as well. That's going to take some time. I will address missing 411 sometime in the near future. I will dedicate a whole show to that. And that's that. Okay, Megan? The next and last question that I will cover before we get to our guest comes from Gary. And Gary writes, he says, "Dear Mr. Miller, I very much agree with the possibility of how disclosure may happen by accident." Okay. Well, thank you, Gary. I appreciate that. For those of you listening that don't know, what I said regarding what Gary is referring to is this. Disclosure won't come from a government official. It won't come from a government body. It just won't happen. And that there's a whole bunch of reasons for that, both short-term and long-term problems that they, I think, probably the government sees, which would be financial and social. But that aside, and I've explained that before in previous shows, but that aside, what Gary is referring to is what I called the private incident, which means your average Joe Schmo citizen, me, you, anybody else who's listening, we may be driving an 18-wheeler down the road, and we happen to hit one of these creatures by accident. And there's a whole series of arguments that can be made on how or what would happen next. But let's just say, just to keep things simple, that particular person is able to get this creature into the back of their 18-wheeler, which would be plenty of room, and they follow some sort of specific sequence that they can disclose to the public, hey, this is what I've found. Or maybe it's a group of hunters that are harassed and attacked, and they shoot one out of self-defense. Again, this is very open to argument and interpretation. I understand that. But maybe they're able to get this creature out of the woods and then disclose. Now, I'm not saying that's how it would happen, and pretty much I'm saying that's probably unrealistic because it hasn't happened to this point, and maybe it has, but we don't know about it because there's extensive initiatives to cover these kind of things up. But with that aside, that's the kind of private citizen incident that may happen, which I think is the only way disclosure may happen. And even if that private incident happens, like I said, there may be such a strong and overwhelming action by some sort of rogue element to keep this thing covered. It may not happen no matter what, even under those conditions, okay? So that's what Gary was referring to. Gary, I appreciate the message to the show. All right, so and the last one, and I think I said I was going to make that one my last one, but this will definitely be the last one. The last one before we get to our guest is Dear Dan, and this comes from John. I very much enjoyed listening to the conversation regarding Dogman. I would love to hear more. So would I. Frankly, the topic scares me half to death. And I think it scares all of you too, which is completely normal in my book. But nonetheless, we'll probably dedicate a whole show to that in the near future as well. Okay? Which reminds me, I am very much going to try and get Linda Godfrey on the show. For those of you who don't know Linda Godfrey, please take the time to Google her. She's written a number of books. The one regarding Dogman is that she's most renowned for is The Beast of Bray Road, which covers a series of Dogman sightings in Wisconsin. All right. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to our guest. Tonight I welcome Doug Blanks, and he is, for those of you who don't know, Doug has an excellent Facebook page called West Georgia Bigfoot. He's got a ton of members, including me. I've been on that. I've been part of that group for, oh, I don't know, probably a couple years. And let me say this, ladies and gentlemen. Doug has done a fantastic job of chronicling events and evidence of Bigfoot activity on his property for a long, long time. And when I mean evidence, I've seen videos on his page of wood knocks, humongous footprints, juvenile footprints, howls, and gifting. And we're going to cover as much as we can regarding all of that over the next 45 minutes to an hour. So, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome Doug Blanks. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So let's start with the beginning.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that you started having experiences when you were a child. You want to talk about that for just a few minutes?
Well, actually, I grew up on the south side of Atlanta, and we fished around the Flint River, and we heard stories and stuff, but we never really had any actual encounters then. Really didn't have any encounters until we moved out here to West Georgia. After my mom had passed away, we moved out here to be closer to my daddy. And the first...
And how old were you?
This is like 8 years ago.
Okay, all
right. Eight years ago. And, you know, we were seeing eyeshine at first at night. We see lights in the woods, but we really... You know, Bigfoot wasn't on our mind. You know, we didn't know what it was. We just kind of chalked it up. But that's kind of weird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these weird things, we kept hearing weird noises at night and kept seeing the lights, the eye shine, and we didn't know what it was. And at the time, my dad was neighbors with a couple who proclaimed that they had habitation on their property and they were trying to sell their house in 6 acres. And that was my dad's neighbor. But at the time, we didn't know that, see. But we were having all this crazy stuff going on my dad's house. Anyway, make a long story short, we moved up here to Villa Rica, but we're still like 20 minutes from my dad, so not too bad. And so we moved up here to Villa Rica, and we started having encounters, I would say, in the fall of that first year we moved here. And we were pretty skeptical. I mean, basically. And but we had watched the show Finding Bigfoot before, so you know it was purely for entertainment. You know, we knew what a wood knock was, we knew what a whoop and a howl was, but we were skeptical. It was just entertainment. You know, we really didn't believe it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the very first encounter we had here at this new house we're at now. We've been here for a little over 3 years, and so one fall evening, I think it's October. I grilled some chicken late in the evening, and I guess the smell. See, give the audience a little clearer picture. I'm surrounded by 200 acres of hunting land,
wow.
And the hunting land, the people who own the land, they don't hunt on it no more. So it's just nothing
okay.
but woods and creeks and ponds, and there's several mountain ridges. And so the very first encounter we had here was after I had grilled, you know. Later that night, my wife had to go pick up my daughter. So she's about 10 o'clock at night. She goes out to the car, and she hears a whoop. You know, but she's heard it on the TV show, so she knew what it sounded like. And she called me on her cell phone, and she said, "I just heard Bigfoot." And, of course, we're laughing, you know.
Oh, my gosh. What a phone call.
Yeah, we're just cutting up. We're laughing. And so she gets back a few minutes later with my daughter. And so I said, "Where'd you hear it?" She says, "Right over there on that ridgeline there." And I was like, "Okay." And so we've seen the show before. So I said, "Let me do like Bobo does. Let me do a little call. See what you know." This is all in good fun. We wasn't expecting anything.
Okay.
So I made a little whoop, you know. And right after that, we heard the loudest wood knock known to man. I mean, it was so close and so loud it shook us to the core. And we just looked at each other. Our eyes were so, and it was like, wow, that really just happened. And that was our first encounter that was like, just made believers at it. It would have made believers at anybody that was standing there. And it was so loud, there's no way a person could have made that loud sound. That was the very first encounter we had. And then from there, it just kept on happening, different encounters.
Wow, that's That's certainly intense. I mean, you could feel the vibrations like right coming up through your feet into your bones.
It was so loud. We felt it to the core. It was so loud, and
my goodness.
It was just right there at the wood line. I mean, it was right there, and there's no way a human on this earth could make a noise that loud.
So
Go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say after
this.
There's a small delay, so that's why our conversations keep running into one another. So just keep in mind there might be a small delay between what you're hearing and what I'm saying. So I apologize for that. Freaking internet. But anyway, so you had this first incident, really,
right.
Like you said, very earth-shaking to the core. And now, from here on out, what happens? Is there a progression? Do you start investigating? And also, does the activity start increasing? Does it take a negative turn, or does it stay positive? What's the progression of events after this now?
Oh, okay. So that piqued my interest. So so I did all the research I could do online or whatnot just to find out, you know. And but to get back to what you said, the incidents were steadily, increasingly happening, and for some reason or another, they like women better than they like men.
I'm sorry for interrupting you, Doug, but that's not as uncommon as you think. And just a minute ago, I was telling you how I'm a big Sasquatch Chronicles fan, and I've heard Wes Germer cite two people that have come on his show that have told him that whenever the women are around and the men are home, well, the activity tends to increase a little bit, but it's not bad. You know, they may see eye shine, or they may even have a gift. You know, some sort of twigs that are weaved, or you know, they may find more than your average number of footprints on their property. But
we've had
there's
all that,
nothing,
you said.
Yeah, and there's nothing bad about it, nothing threatening about it. But
right,
now
right.
I think there might have been a story where there were two women with two husbands sharing the same home so that they could keep the rent low, and
right.
both husbands traveled, and so when husbands would come back home from being on the road after 2-3 days, well, the activity would then turn negative. House slaps, you know, rocks would be thrown. But then when the men would back out on the road and just the women were there, then the more harassment type of behavior would cease. And then of course the men would come back home again, and then the more harassment type of behavior would begin again. So that's not as uncommon as we might think. But go ahead and continue. So you noticed that though that things weren't bad when it was just your wife at home.
No, what would happen was at night she would take the dog outside every night, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, take it for a walk. So, you know, take your dog out at night. And she started hearing the whoops again and eye shine. And she actually seen one crawling with eye shine. And you know, it's... they can mimic any animal, and she would hear a cow right on top of the ridge line. And there's no cows up on that top of that ridge. I mean, it's steep, you know. And they do owls too. They do owls really good. But yeah, it's like one night she opened the garage door, she stepped out with the dog, and she just heard a siren howl. You know, you've heard the Ohio howl.
Sure.
Well, it was what one night was like that. And then I went out one night, and there were two of them up on the ridge right across here, not far at all. And they were going back and forth with me with their owl calls and just gibberish they were doing. And I used to work with this deaf guy, and he taught me how to sign. So I thought I would just sign to them just to see if I'd get a reaction. And so I would sign to them, I'm your friend. And so what would happen? What I would sign that I'm their friend, and then there was two of them. And then they start going crazy with the owl calls and the cow, you know. And then they'd go on like that for about, you know, a minute or so, and then they'd stop. And then I would wait. You know, just to make sure, you know, that this was really going on. So I'd wait, and I wouldn't do anything for a few seconds. And then as soon as I started my signing again, I'm your friend, they immediately started going berserk again. And this went on for about 15 minutes. And that was a pretty cool encounter.
My goodness. Now, I have heard some really interesting stuff, but that ranks up there with some of the best. So if I heard you straight, what you're saying is that you knew how to sign from working
yep.
with a deaf guy, and
yep.
you signed that I am your friend to these two creatures
right.
that you spotted at the top of a ridgeline on
exactly.
That's behind your property, and they would in turn communicate with you by mimicking animal sounds. That is unbelievably amazing.
Yeah, I would say that was probably the coolest encounter I had. I have had a face-to-face, but that interaction to me was more cooler because we were actually interacting. I would tell them I was their friend, and then immediately they would go into their owls and their gibberish and their cow.
Now,
and then I would, that was the coolest that I've had.
Now, the creatures mimicking other animals is nothing new. As most of you have probably figured out that's listening, I am a podcast junkie. I listen to many, many podcasts, especially the ones regarding Bigfoot. And again, I hope Mr. Germer doesn't mind me the continuous references, but you listen to Sasquatch Chronicles, Arcane Radio. If you listen to episodes that are talking about Bigfoot on Darkness Radio out of Minneapolis with Dave Schrader, all these podcasters have had guests that all say the same thing as you, Doug, where at one time or another, they heard mimicking other animals before.
Right.
And
right.
So that's nothing new. And the fact that they did that as a response to your signing is,
exactly.
That is just unbelievably amazing. Now, I've got two questions I got to ask, but I'm only going to ask the first one right now. Can you talk about the face to face?
Okay, that was rather recent, about a month and a half ago. It's broad daylight. I was out walking, and like I always do, because I always go out there and check my areas, and I got my dog with me, and I got her on a leash.
And this is behind this is on the property, this big.
Right, exactly.
Just to give it a summary, it's a big. Big 200-acre thick woods that was used for hunting but is no longer used for hunting, and this
right.
is the area that you're checking out, correct?
Yeah, there's you can go walking back there forever. It's 200 acres. It's nothing but wilderness and woods.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm there and I'm just looking towards the ridgeline, and I see movement. Right, I see movement in the ridgeline, and so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, what is that? So I walk a little further, and I look, and I see a face looking right back at me through the brush. I see eyes, I see nose, I see mouth, I see eyebrows. I can see the hair that's on top. I see the cone-shaped head, and it's staring right at me, and I'm looking right at it. And this is like 10 seconds combined. We're just still looking at each other. And I got my dog with me on the leash. And so I looked down just for a brief moment just to see
mm-hmm.
what she was getting into, and I looked right back, and the face was gone.
Now, how did your dog – was your dog stressing out or whimpering, or did your dog notice that there was a creature nearby?
She knows they're there before I do. She's very keen to it. And just yesterday, I took her out yesterday morning, and we had a rock thrown at us. But it wasn't nowhere near where it hurt us. But mm-hmm. but I could actually see the rock hit the ground and roll.
Okay, so now let's go back to that sighting real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you tell me what color the hair was?
The hair was more of a darkish it had gray in it, but black, and the face was gray, and the eyes were kind of sunk in a little, and you could make out a flat nose. I mean, it was a perfect face staring right back at me. That's my next question,
Doug. Is what is there something you can reference for the listeners to tell us what the face looked like? Are we looking at was it the face maybe like of the pattern? Creature, or maybe something that we maybe see in a like a zoo or some sort of a National Geographic book. What did the face look like?
Well, it didn't look like Patty. The eyes were kind of sunken in a little, and the brow was pretty high up on both eyes, and the nose was kind of flattened, and the mouth. And I could make out some teeth, they have square teeth like we do. Then like sometimes you see them pictured with sharp fangs like a raging monster, but no, it has flat teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And we just stared at each other. The face really didn't have a whole lot of hair on it. The surrounding it did, but the cone shape really was amazing. And I just glanced down the ground at my dog just for a brief moment and look up, and it was gone. But
now, did you hear something that the creature?
I seen movement between the trees. I seen movement out there a lot. I seen mm-hmm. Flashes of movement, and I seen movement. And so when I seen the movement, I kept looking, and that's when I seen the face looking at me.
Okay.
And once it was looking at me, we were a lot like in who's going to blink first kind of. And I looked down just for a second, and I looked right back up, and the face was gone.
Man, yeah. that must have been that. Were you?
The hair on my back of my neck was standing up.
Were you scared?
The hair on the back of my neck was standing up. I wasn't really scared because I'd been out there at night with her in pitch dark, and I thought, well, if they wanted to hurt me, they could have, you know, because they're so huge. I mean, I have found 22-inch prints out there, and I've seen a tree snap that was at least over 10 feet high, maybe 12 feet high tree. So you figure you got an 8 or 9 foot creature reaching up, breaking a twig off at 12 feet high. It's a big, and of course, I believe there's a family unit because I, like you said, I have found juvenile prints too, and I have found the female print was 16 inches.
22 inch print. My God, Doug, that's a giant.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But what I think I was looking at was one of the juveniles.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, let me. Because
they're more curious. They're more curious.
Which is natural.
Yeah, right.
Now, here's the second question that I had. You said you had a rock thrown at you
yep.
recently, that's a good lead in for my next question. Have you had anything that you would consider a bad experience or something that's a little too close to home or something that frightens you or your family or your dog? Anything like that that's happened?
No, not really. The only thing that really freaked us out was that very first loud wood knock because it was right there and it was so loud and you, it'd be easy to interpret that as being angry activity, like somebody's really mad at you. But they've tossed rocks, like the rock that was tossed at me recently, you know, I mean, it wasn't nowhere near me. It was like 20 or 30 feet, but I actually seen the rock hit the ground, and I heard it, you know, and nothing really aggressive, no. If they wanted to hurt me, they had plenty of chances to do it.
So, in your opinion, Doug, is the rock throwing their way of saying, hey, listen, we're out here, so leave us alone? Are they tossing a rock to let you know, hey, we're here, and or it's like almost like, are they seeking attention? Are they seeking your attention, or are they telling you, look, we're here, so be careful, or what?
I think they're just saying, hey, we're over here. Are they, you know, I've got friends of mine, you know, they've got more experience at it than I do, and they say they have a sense of humor, and they could be just messing with me, you know. but they're like, hey, we're over here, you know. I mean, if they wanted to, they could have thrown that rock a whole lot closer.
Okay. So now let's switch gears for just a moment. Let's talk about evidence. As I had prefaced earlier in the show, I've seen, you know, I'm on your Facebook page, West Georgia Bigfoot. And I have seen fantastic documentation of footprints. I've seen unbelievable stick structures. And I'm not talking about just dead. For those of you listening, Doug does not post pictures of just deadfall. We have humongous, healthy, not dead, but healthy trees that are bent over and literally twisted together to form, you know, a 20-foot high teepee, which does not happen in nature by itself. Doug has chronicled, like I said, the wood knocks, and I think I even heard a howl here and there in certain clips. And I'm wondering, Doug, are you doing your own? And you don't have to answer this because I understand how important it is for privacy when it comes to evidence collection.
Right.
Well,
right.
Not only that, but evidence collection requires a certain amount of privacy also. And I'm wondering, so if you don't want to answer this, you don't have to, but are you using this to your advantage of doing a mass collection of evidence, or are you just taking it a little bit as a time? What are you doing in regards to all of the evidence that's being laid out on your property?
When I see something new, I just like to document it, you know, either making a video or a picture, you know, because I went out there the other day and I found something new. another structure. You know, the leaves have just really fallen, and you can really see good back there now. And I've noticed there's a couple more brand new structures back there, and I'm going to get out there real soon, and I'm going to document that. I like to wait till we get. I like to wait till we get a freeze because I know the snakes are in the holes because there's full of copperheads and rattlesnakes and stuff. So
okay, now I
for,
have
for everybody out there,
more...
you know, to be safe, you know,
definitely
safety first.
I have two more very important questions that I've come up with that I want to ask you. But before I get to that, those two questions, Doug, I just want to kind of cap off the whole – I just want to cap this little idea in my mind that you haven't had anything overly aggressive or threatening to any one of your family, including that beautiful dog of yours, like, you know, at your home or anything like that. Is that correct?
Right, right. And maybe somebody else might perceive it being threatening that that didn't know any better. But I've not had like a real mean growl or nothing like that.
Okay.
I think the Rockbone's pretty innocent because if they wanted to, they could have got a whole lot closer.
Okay,
you know,
That first wood knock
was so loud. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was mad or not. But that's what woke us up. I tell you that.
Well, if he was doing that just to shake hands and say hello, that's quite one hell of a way to do it. That's for sure.
He might. This is what I was thinking. At the time, I didn't know no better. You know, because, like I told you, we were skeptical. We were just, you know, it was all in good fun. You know, when I did the whoop, you know, like Bobo does,
mm-hmm.
I don't think they like that. Because
yeah, I don't blame them.
I think that super loud wood knock was letting me know that, hey, I don't like you doing that. And so, for me, the key is respect. I don't go out there whooping and hollering, doing Bobo calls and all that. I'm just walking around quietly, you know, mind my own business, and they'll pretty much come to you, you know, if you just don't go out there acting like a crazy person, you know, screaming and hollering and whacking baseball bats against trees. You know, that don't really work too good. That just makes them mad.
Yeah, I can understand that. Now, you know, I'm one of those guys that takes a more what's the word I'm looking for? I take a more cautious approach to these kind of situations because
right. I don't blame you.
I made a choice to focus my investigative studies on more aggressive cases, like in Honobia, Oklahoma, Spotsville, Kentucky, even the couple here in Georgia where the famous Elkins Creek cast was cast and
was found
and cast by that retired sheriff. Those specific cases are cases where people were inside their own homes, minding their own business, not doing howls and wood knocks, and they were pretty much forced out of their homes. And that's why I kind of have a more – I hate to use the word negative, but I have a more negative opinion on what could or could not happen to someone who has these creatures habituating on somebody's property. Now, with that –
I think especially since you mentioned that that Ural Mountains incident with the students, you know, that would definitely make somebody cautious.
You know what? I'm not quite sure if I emphasized it enough, but they uncovered a photo that was never shown to the public.
I've seen that. Yeah, that's some pretty good information they have. Pretty good documentation.
Yeah. Now, since we're talking about it, Doug, and you did see that documentary, do you know anything about that guy, Mike Lebecki? I've never heard of him before.
I've never heard of him either. To me, it was compelling, the story, but it was more on the entertainment side. Now,
I've said that a million
times.
There's a
Russian guy, Igor. He's friends with me, and he's really been researching it for years, you know, the Russian Yeti, and he's got a wealth of knowledge. And,
you know, I was saying how in my previous show, you know, when it comes to these TV shows, a third of whatever Bigfoot is on TV, I've probably I think it's probably crap, and so I don't watch it.
The second third
are probably something that's good, but I've seen it a million times. I don't need to watch it again.
Exactly.
But the remaining third that may be out there,
right,
will sometimes captivate me, which that documentary did captivate me, but it's still on TV, so you have to take it with a grain of salt.
Exactly. They really don't know what happened to those students, but whatever it was traumatic. I mean, I would hate to think that the Russian Yeti did that to them. Of course, you know, they found Russian army boot prints that were there, too. Mm-hmm. Who knows what happened, really, but because, you know, we really don't know. Speculation is all it is.
Yeah, and that's what I said in my previous show when I was talking about the Dyatlov incident, that all we have are our own opinions. And, you know, if you separate the evidence from all the speculation, you can't help but kind of – you got the photo. Then you got the photo of the footprints. You got the Russian army boot that was recovered before the search and rescue teams got there.
And you got
then
the flints in the tent where they were looking out.
Where they were looking out, in specifically towards the tree line of the forest where the footprints and the howls were coming from.
And then they interviewed the old lady that they called.
Yeah.
They interviewed the old lady, and she called it the mink. And
the mink,
and she said that when she was a little girl, she was told never to go play outside in the evening because they eat women and children.
Right, yeah, the Mensi called it the mink.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's what she said on that documentary.
That's right. Okay, so listen, Doug, it has been a great ride thus far. What we're going to do now is we're just going to take about a 2.5-minute break just to kind of reset. I got to do a couple things on the internet on my end. So don't hang up. Everybody listening, just hang tight. We'll be back in just a couple minutes, okay? All right. Everybody, this is Dan Miller with George Bigfoot Radio. We are back with our guest, Doug Blanks. Doug, it has been a great show. The hour is flying by. You ready to continue onward?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right, my man. That's what I like. Now, Doug, because the hour is flying by and we're pressed for time, I have two questions for you. And so I want to dedicate the remainder of the show to getting these two questions answered. Okay.
Okie dokie.
All right. Now, I'm going to tell you a story real quick, a short story, which will then lead into my question, and you'll understand why I'm doing this. Now,
okay.
About 10 years ago, there was a woman in Southwest Missouri, and she started chronicling and documenting serious creature, Bigfoot creature activity on her property. She lived out in the middle of nowhere, which would be, I think, in that part of the country, that's the Ozarks. And her nearest neighbor was like 2 miles away in either direction.
Right.
And behind her house were nothing but, you know, thick woods for miles and miles and miles of federally protected land, no less. So there was no hunting, no nothing on it. And she was taking pictures on a daily basis of, you could see eyeshine with outlines of creatures standing behind trees. They were gifting her. She was taking photos. She would leave out an untangled ball of yarn, and the next morning she would be taking pictures of these amazing shapes that were tied up and formed by, assume, these creatures. She was taking pictures of, she would see these creatures outside her window, and she was confiding all of this in one person. I'm not going to name who it was, because it's somebody that in the Bigfoot community we probably all recognize, so I'm not going to do that. But nonetheless, because this one person was publicly documenting everything that this woman was seeing, eventually word got out, and this woman started getting a lot of uninvited guests, hunters, documentarians, people from Hollywood that wanted to do documentaries on her property about Bigfoot. Research, just your average Joe researcher was showing up. It got to a point where she actually had to call the police numerous times to get these people removed off her property. Now, what does this have to do with my question? Here's my question to you, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
You have a similar situation, and I'm almost tempted to say you have a habituation situation, and I try to avoid that word habituation because it is a very controversial topic when we're in the realm of Bigfoot research and investigations. But just for the sake of argument, let's say that that woman in Southwest Missouri had a habituation situation, and the type of evidence that's being left and the type of visitations that's happening on a consistent basis over an extended period of time, which is similar to what you have been encountering on your own property, almost be all secondly categorized as you may have a habituation situation. Now, with all that
is I believe so.
Okay, so with all that as a big preface, what are your feelings about wanting to disclose to higher, more public authorities about what's happening on your property?
You're saying people to come here to my property?
Yes. In the form of documentarians, researchers,
only a trusted friend, maybe, but I wouldn't call moneymaker or nobody like that.
That's where I was going. That's where I was going with my question. Let's leave Hollywood out of it for a moment. Let's leave TV and stuff out of the equation. What if you start getting calls or messages from, say, Moneymaker or someone that has a more popular national – or like Dave Schrader of Darkness Radio, or even like George Norrie of Coast to Coast? What if these guys want to start coming to talk to you? They want to come to your property and experience and stuff. What are your feelings about that?
Well, I wouldn't mind talking, but see, over these past few years, I believe I've built up trust with the big guys that are here. And I wouldn't want to break. I've had people message me, private message me, wanting to know exactly my location, and I will not tell them. Cause
no,
I believe it. I don't want it to turn into a zoo. Now, I have some really close, trusted friends, and that's fine. But I don't want it to turn into a zoo or nothing. I, you know, I don't want to lose the trust that I've built up to this point. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense, because what you just described of what you don't want to happen, becoming a zoo, is what happened to that woman in Southwest Missouri.
See, that is exactly what I'd be trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cause because they would just leave and go somewhere else.
Right.
I mean, there's plenty of woods. I mean, but I believe that this clan of Bigfoot has been on this property probably for generations. I mean, they were here way before this house was built. And this is Southern Appalachia, and this is up on a ridge, and it's not just me. I mean, I've got a buddy that lives over here. He's a good friend of mine, and he's got all kinds of stuff going on his property. I mean, it's unbelievable. If more people knew what to look for and they listened for, I mean, they're literally living under our noses in some places.
Okay, that is a very serious statement that I agree with. And again, for everybody listening, I'm sorry that I'm going to reference him again, but Wes Germer of Sasquatch Chronicles has said this, and I believe it 100%. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. These creatures live a lot closer to civilization than we realize. Isn't that right, Doug?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it's not just me. Like I said, I got a buddy over here, and there's one place over here. I'm not going to name it. It's a mountain. It's got a name. I'm not going to mention it. But me and my wife were driving past it, and that area has got a lot of activity. Also, I seen tree teepee structures, huge ones. From the road. I mean, but see, most people don't know what to look for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bigfoot's the last thing on their mind.
And, right.
But you know what really freaks me out more than seeing these teepee structures? It seems like when it gets like super cold out during the winter months,
mm-hmm.
we'll go outside late at night, and you'll hear these blood curdling screams. They make these high pitched screams. It sounds like somebody's murdering a woman or something. I mean, I don't. Those screams is really what kind of freaks me out. But that's just. I've come to realize that's just what they do. It's like a pattern every year.
Do you have a hypothesis of why they think of why you think they do?
I don't know. I heard that they go into the mating season around the same time the deer goes into their rut. But I don't know. I've come to find out they're way more active in the fall and the colder months. I mean, of course, I have had activity in the summer too, but it seems like in the fall, the cold, the winter months, it's like every day, you know. It's crazy.
Now, Doug,
they're really active.
You're not leaving them food, are you?
No. I come to a realization that they don't need my help getting food.
Yeah, there was a case that I read about. An individual was having the same type of activity on his property as you're having, and
right.
I believe this was out in Colorado. I could be wrong, but. I think it was out in Colorado, and he started after there was, I guess, some trust built up where over a period of time, nothing negative had happened to him. So he felt not 100%, but he felt reasonably comfortable with these creatures,
right.
You know, on his property. And
right.
I guess to some degree, these creatures felt comfortable with him because they weren't doing anything negative. You know, they would stop and he'd look out and he'd see eyes shine and some swaying behind trees and he'd catch footprints
right.
and, you know, he'd hear sounds and see structures.
Right.
Nothing out of the ordinary that would
right.
be considered aggressive or negative. But
right,
but he
right.
started leaving him. He started leaving him food.
Uh-oh.
And what happened was he was a reservist that ended up getting called up.
Okay.
And after
the food
after that's right, the food stopped. Now, when he left, he had asked, I think it was a relative, like a cousin, to check on his property. And after like the first 2 weeks that he was gone, when the cousin relative showed up just to check on the property, get the mail, et cetera, he saw some debris coming out of his backyard. And when the cousin walked around to the back of his house, it looked like a tornado had gone through there. His back deck was torn all up. All his patio furniture was torn and shredded. There were some dead animals left on in his backyard. I mean, it looked horrible. It was a horrific scene. And the whole point of that particular incident was that if you start leaving these creatures food, you are playing a super dangerous game that can really turn negative if you start doing that.
The only thing I've did was one time, you know, a friend of mine told me they like watermelon rind. So one evening I threw a small piece of watermelon rind in the backyard. The next day I went back out there. They had took one bite out of it, and it looked like a human bite. You know, it's got the shape just like a human bite, but a lot bigger, of course. And they took one bite out of it and they spit it out. I seen the watermelon rind with the bite that was taken out, and then really close by I seen where they spit it out. So I said, I guess they didn't like that. But I have heard of people doing this. They'll take a jar of peanut butter and put it out there in a gifting area, because it would take somebody to open up the can of the jar of peanut butter. Any animal just couldn't open it up. So I have heard of people doing that, you know, putting peanut butter out there, because a raccoon, a possum, a coyote cannot unscrew the top of a peanut butter. So it would have to take a person or a Bigfoot. I've never tried that, but I have seen other people that are doing their investigation. They have left peanut butter out, you know, the jar, you know, and the big guys will come by. They'll take the lid off. You look in there, you can see with the big fingers that scoop a scoop of peanut butter out, and they put the top back on.
Oh my gosh!
So that's why some people do that, because they just want to see, you know, if they're going to do that, you know, because if it was a raccoon or something like that, they're not going to be able to screw the lid off.
Now, did you say Doug, that you, if you happen to find a print, now obviously you're collecting evidence because you post most of it on West Georgia Bigfoot on the Facebook page.
As I do.
So you've got video, you've got audio, you've got photos. Are you also collecting any DNA type of evidence, or you don't have to disclose that if you don't want to.
No, I haven't. I have looked for like a hair, you know, stuff like in bushes and stuff, but I haven't found any.
Oh, okay.
Now maybe that bite they took out of that watermelon rind, I might have could have took that little piece he spit out and got some DNA off of it, but I didn't do it. But
okay.
I mean, there's 200 acres out, and there's nobody out there that's gonna walk through my yard in the middle of the night and take a bite out of a watermelon rind. And plus the bite was pretty big, you know. I mean, it's the same shape as us, but it's just a lot bigger.
Now, one thing you mentioned, Doug, that leads me to my next question, and we're going to wrap this up pretty soon.
Okay, it flew by, didn't it?
God, I know it. Well, yeah, when you have a great conversation going like us, it just flies by, you know. But, hey, that's the way it goes. That's a good thing. But anyway, you had mentioned that you've got neighbors, and they're experiencing activity too. Anything negative, or is it all along the same lines of what you're experiencing?
Yeah, the friend of mine that lives, he don't live very far from me. He sent me this picture of this beautiful astrid that they made. It's a structure. It looks like I posted it on my. I'm sure you saw it on my page. It's an astrid. I don't know if the juveniles do that, but he hasn't. Now he did tell me that some nights they will come knock on the side of his house, and they'll clear rocks. And actually, his mother had a sighting of one, but nothing violent. Like I told you earlier in the show, I've been out there at night in the pitch dark, you know, me and my dog. And if they wanted to hurt me, they had plenty of chances to grab me and just drag me off, and I'd never be seen again.
You know what I say? You'd end up in a David Paulides book.
Exactly right. He writes those books, but he never comes out and says. I mean, he leads you to believe it, but he never actually comes out and admits that it's Bigfoot doing that.
Well, you know, it's strange that we stumbled upon this topic, but if you listen to my previous shows, I have said many times that what David Paulides does, and I'm a big fan of his, what he does is that he establishes patterns based on facts. Now, what
right.
he does is describe in very detailed and specific fashion that what these facts and patterns show is a high degree of strange and bizarre. Now he doesn't.
I'll agree with that. Exactly.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't name the source of the strange
exactly.
and the bizarre. And that's
exactly.
completely. If I was in his shoes, I would do the same thing. Because if you sort as soon as you name a source, you're backing yourself into a corner.
Right.
And frankly, there's not enough evidence, physical evidence, to say okay, it's this or it's that. But what the one thing that I've probably said a million times, and I'll say it a million more, is that if I was looking at Mr. David Paulides right now and talking to him, I would say if the facts show a high degree of strange and bizarre, isn't it safe to say that the source of the disappearance is just as strange and bizarre? The source is as strange and bizarre. Then now we have to define what's strange and bizarre. Well, there's many
right.
things that are strange and bizarre. Aliens, cults, dogmen, and of course Bigfoot is right there in there in that mix
right.
when it comes to
right.
strange and bizarre. So there are certain cases, I believe, throughout the missing 411 that are not labeled Bigfoot, but I think there are those creatures are involved, but we just don't know which ones and we don't know for sure. But that's, as we have mentioned a million times over, like you and I did earlier in the show, all we have is our opinions.
Exactly right. And, you know, I have captured the wood knocks on audio, and mm-hmm. and I've documented the structures and the footprints. But, you know, I don't think it's going to take a whole lot to convince people, you know. But I guarantee you, if you'd have been standing with me that night, that wood knock, it's been a whole hard to believe really quick.
I'm sure. You know, I was talking about this on a previous show, Doug. I love the outdoors. I have a deep-seated passion for camping and hiking. And
right.
I've become quite the minimalist, too, which means that I can pack a whole weekend of gear and food into one 35-liter backpack, which is relatively small. And
Survivor, man.
Yeah, right. My own version, I guess. But nonetheless, you know, being a minimalist allows me a lot of flexibility and time to go from place to place. And I hate to admit this because I always preach against it, but my deep-seated passion for camping and being outdoors comes with the fact that I enjoy the solitude of being alone. And the more I do this show, the more books I read, the more people I talk to, I'll be out on a hiking trail, and my God, Doug, I start getting so paranoid that
you're looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, oh my gosh! And you know, I've got to. I don't know. I don't know if I've got to start changing that and start bringing people with me, or I don't know.
My wife's got a gift. Like, she'll go out there and she'll have a feeling that something is watching her, and she's
mm-hmm.
usually right. She's usually right.
I hate that. You know, I've had two. This just last. Let's see. Today's December 1st. If you go back past September, when the weather was still pretty warm.
Yeah.
I had not one but two Actually, I had three experiences. I didn't have a sighting, but I had three experiences in the Chattahoochee Wildlife Management Area, which, as you know, up there in White County, is a tremendous hotspot of activity.
So you had some encounters there.
You did?
No, I said you did. You had some encounters.
Yeah,
you had three encounters.
It wasn't
Class A encounters, but you had encounters.
Yeah, yes, I did have experiences there, and I don't think I've ever really disclosed those. But one of the three experiences I had was, and if, for those of you that know this area, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you go up, everybody knows where Helen is because that's a big you know, Oktoberfest.
Big tourist
area.
Attraction there.
That's
mm-hmm.
right. But if you go slightly northwest of Helen, up 17. There's certain small trails called gaps that are off of the Appalachian Trail, and one of the particular gap trails that I hiked back in September led me up to Cow Rock Mountain, which is a beautiful little open area. It's not a big open area, but it's a big beautiful open area that with an incredible view of the mountains, and.
Right.
It just so happens that behind all this flat rock is this big, soft, tall grass. And in that grass, my God, doesn't it look like something had been laying down in there? And I'm thinking to myself, here I am on top of this. You know, I'm 6 feet away from being thrown over the edge if need be. you know, 300 feet down, and
you just walked into Bigfoot's
like,
bedroom.
Yeah, it looks like I walked right into a bedding area, and I'm thinking, oh, and I'm all by myself, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? And
He's
then,
like,
and then the other one, not too far from there, just a little bit south now, back towards Helen, one of the Chattahoochee Wildlife Management Area campgrounds. There's three of them. One of them. There's a trail that is actually connected to the campground. I took that trail, and about a mile and a half in, what do I find? I find a big stick that has been planted into the ground next to a stack of rocks. And I'm thinking
– That's definitely the big guys.
Yeah,
I've got sticks in my backyard that are just slammed into the ground. It's just an amazing phenomena.
I literally stopped in my tracks. I looked around and I said, you know what? This is some sort of marker. And Doug, I'm by myself. So I turned around. I got the hell out of there.
Yeah, I have those in my backyard. They'll take us. I call it a stick. It's more like a tree limb. It's pretty thick, maybe almost thick as a baseball bat, and they'll take it and they'll just jam it straight into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's
and they're
right.
poking up, just like what you saw.
Yep.
And I've seen the stack rocks, too. But I have probably four or five of those sticks in my backyard that are poking up like that.
Yeah, I mean,
I had the
twofer because the next to the stick was the rock stack.
Yeah,
I mean
they were like
12 inches apart.
Yeah, you were they were probably watching you and you didn't even know it.
Oh, I'm sure. Thanks.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna be the one ending up in a Paul Eadie's book.
No, you found a bedding area, and they were probably watching you there too. I'm sure they're so stealthy. They could be there. I mean, and you will never know. I mean, they're masters of just being so elusive.
You know, when I was talking about disclosure in my previous show about, you know, the short term windfall of disclosure, the pitfall would be something financial, but because not even if someone doesn't even realize it, what you just said touches at the conscious and subconscious level. And what I mean by that is this: just knowing that there's a 7 to 8 foot tall, 600 pound creature that is so unbelievably quiet and stealthy with a great amount of intelligence to such a point that you could, they could be 3 feet from you and you don't know it,
right.
is so frightening that somebody would rather go camping voluntarily in a bear infested area because at least they can see them coming.
So we're going to the beach this year. Exactly.
So, but anyway, I had my third experience at Ravencliffs, which is also a Chattahoochee Wildlife Management Area, a place, but that's kind of a longer story, which unfortunately we won't have time for, and I'll save that for later. Doug, we're in our last couple minutes. Is there anything else you'd like to add? The floor is yours, Senator.
Okay. I covered pretty much everything. Like I said, I was out today with my I take her out, you know, because she has you take your dog out to go to the bathroom, you know, two or three times a day. And we heard two wood knocks earlier today, just whack whack like that, you know. I mean, there's this hunting land here. They don't hunt. Nobody hunts on it no more, you know. There might be some rednecks maybe coming by shooting some guns off every now and then, but that's not hardly doesn't happen often, but.
Right.
But
for those of you that don't know, Doug has a beautiful black lab named Maggie. Isn't that right, Doug?
Yeah, that's right. She's barking now. She's like, I need to go out.
All right, Doug. Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we are out of time. Doug, it has been I knew it was going to be a great show, but it's been even better than I thought. It's been fantastic having you on. With your blessing,
thank you.
I would love to have you back on again if that's all right.
Sure, anytime.
Awesome, awesome. Doug, listen, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add? And
for
those of you listening, anytime. And for those of you listening, please go to Doug's West Georgia Bigfoot Facebook page. It's awesome. You can see all the evidence that Doug chronicles. Once again, Doug, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
All right, well, listen, you have a good night now. Take care.
All right, good night.
All right, good night.
Good night, buddy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Like I said, I think it was a great one. Loved having Doug on here. We will be back next week. And until then, be safe, treat your pets good, and everybody take care out there. Good night.
But I never really know where to go. So the game was up to a friend. Peace and love.